You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news in technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey folks, Ben Mathis here. The holidays are upon us, and it's about time to start buying gifts. If you're smart like me, you'll skip the madness of the stores and do most of your shopping on Amazon this year. And if you're going to be doing that anyway, then help support the show by going to the sponsor page on our website at kickassnews.com and copying and pasting the Amazon link there into your web browser before you start ordering. Then Amazon will toss us a little something for every purchase you make this holiday season. You have to shop for gifts anyways. They've got just about everything you can imagine on Amazon delivered right to your door. It won't cost you anything extra, and you can help support the show. So it's kind of like giving two gifts for the price of one this year. And that, my friends, is what you call a Christmas miracle. So again, go to the sponsor page at kickassnews.com and copy our Amazon link into your web browser before you start shopping. And if you feel extra generous this Christmas, then make a donation to keep us going over here at gofundme.com/kickassnews. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast.
We had set out into the unknown. Explorers of a new world. I was part of the first mission.
Mission Control, we're looking at a red planet.
A new hope for humanity.
For as long as we've looked up at the night sky, wonder, that is what we felt.
Creating a self-sustaining civilization on Mars would be the greatest adventure ever in human history. It would be so exciting to wake up in the morning and think that that's what's happening.
With every discovery.
Right now, we're becoming a multiplanetary species.
With every hardship. I'm worried. I don't know about this.
We had these people taking immense risks.
We were taking a step forward for humankind. We spent all this time looking for something, and they'll bring us all together.
Earth's surface is the shoreline of a new ocean.
Hey, you ready for this?
Are you? Here we go.
Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. That was the trailer for Mars, National Geographic's new six-part miniseries about the Red Planet, which debuted just this week. From executive producers Ron Howard and Brian Grazer, Mars combines dramatizations of the first manned voyage to Mars in the year 2033 with interviews with experts like Neil deGrasse Tyson and Elon Musk. National Geographic has published a beautiful companion book to the miniseries, with lots of illustrations, maps, and a foreword by Ron Howard. It's called Mars, Our Future on the Red Planet, and it's written by my guest today, Leonard David. He's an award-winning space journalist who's been reporting on space activities for over 50 years now. Leonard is Space.com's Space Insider columnist, as well as a correspondent for Space News and a contributing writer for Aerospace America and other publications. Leonard is co-author with Apollo 11's Buzz Aldrin of Mission to Mars, My Vision for Space Exploration, as well as other books like Space Careers, Extreme Flight Rocket Science, and Chaos to Cosmos, A Space Odyssey. Mr. David has been a consultant to NASA and served as director of research for the National Commission on Space. In 2015, he became the first recipient of the American Astronautical Society's Ordway Award for Sustained Excellence in Spaceflight History, and in 2010, he received the National Space Club Press Award. Today, Leonard David will elaborate on why we want to go to Mars, and he'll discuss the science behind Nat Geo's Mars miniseries, including how we'll get there, how long it may take, and how humans will survive the harsh environment of the red planet that includes, among other perils, very little oxygen or gravity, gale force winds, and cancer-causing radiation. He'll also talk about what scientists hope to discover and the possibility that life may already exist on Mars. We'll discuss the psychological toll of venturing so far from Earth and enduring extreme isolation, and what type of person could have the right stuff for the first manned mission. Plus the politics of going to Mars, and why private sector initiatives led by businessmen like Elon Musk could beat NASA to the punch. Coming up with space journalist Leonard David in just a moment. Leonard David is an award-winning space journalist who's been reporting on space activities for over 50 years. He frequently contributes to the website space.com as their Space Insider columnist. He is the co-author of Buzz Aldrin's Mission to Mars, and now he's written the companion book to National Geographic Channel's much-anticipated six-part miniseries about Mars, which premieres on Nat Geo November 14th. The book is called Mars, Our Future on the Red Planet. Leonard David, thanks for sitting down with me.
Thank you very much. We've got a big future ahead of us, so I'm ready to go. Let's go.
Yeah, this is exciting stuff, and I love the book. I wish I could show it to people because it has all kinds of great pictures and maps and drawings of what it might be like if we actually went to Mars. Pretty exciting stuff, and you'll have to forgive me because I will be playing devil's advocate a little bit here. I guess the biggest question would be, you know, when we launched the Apollo mission, we were in a space race with the Soviet Union, and so much of our desire to go to the moon was pretty much about ego and winning. Absent that motive, why should we care about spending all this time and effort to go to Mars?
Well, you're the devil in the details. That gets back to your first comment. There are a lot of devils in the detail.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm old enough now. I went through all of the Apollo landings. It was a great honor to write with Buzz Aldrin a book on Mars exploration. It's hard to remember for younger listeners that there was a space race. I mean, we were seriously talking about economic values of space exploration, the communists versus capitalism. I mean, I'm old enough now, and I'm still standing to say that I saw Sputnik go overhead. And it was scary because nobody had ever seen an artificial satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew what was in the artificial satellite.
Right.
Is it a bomb?
Yeah.
What are these people doing over there? Then they launched a dog. They launched Laika.
Right.
And they're launching dogs in space. Well, what are they doing? And it was a pretty good mystery because it's a very closed society, the Soviet Union back then. People were making up stories about what they were.
There must have been a lot of curiosity about what was their end game. Why are they spending all this money to go into space?
And, and it's the communists are taking over outer space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds corny today, but in that context of the times,
yeah,
we're talking very serious diplomatic issues, very much.
Yeah.
What is Eisenhower? You know, I grew up with Eisenhower as a president. Like, you got to go flip through the history books. Oh, Eisenhower. that's my president when I came into this was Eisenhower. And what do we do about the space race? And then it went into the Kennedy era, which responded to that space race.
Yeah. So then since we don't have that competition aspect, I mean, I suppose to some extent we still do. But absent that, why do we want to go take it one step further or many steps further, really, and go to Mars? What are we getting out of this?
Well, you know, I'll challenge you on we have multiple space races going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting. I do think there is a world global interest in Mars exploration. Because other countries want to answer the key question, is there life on Mars?
Mm-hmm.
Is there life on Mars? If it wasn't there, you know, why didn't it take hold?
Yeah.
Was it there? It died off. Is it there now? These are great questions.
Yeah.
And I think that's a race of scientific caliber to answer that question. Multiple countries are trying to answer that question, not just the United States.
Yeah.
The other space race is entrepreneurial. It's like, hey, I'm a private business and I can get to Mars and I can help you out, NASA or other countries. And it's Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or Virgin Galactic with Richard Branson. That's a private sector involvement in space.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a space race there. And then I think there's a bigger race that is back to the old days that we are showing leadership in space, NASA or the United States, compared to what China wants to do, compared to what Europe wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there is there are multiple space races today that need closure. And from a writer standpoint, a journalist, it's all fun. This is great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, like China, they're talking about going to the moon, which we did how many years ago now? 50 years ago. So
1969. You know,
there has to be a bit of it that we're kind of showing off. You know, okay, yeah, you guys go to the moon. We're going to focus on the big next step here.
Yeah. But believe me, it's conceivable, and don't be surprised, that NASA may be wrong. NASA may itself have gone on a track on Mars exploration like, we got to put people on Mars. Forget the moon. We've been there. We've done that. The moon has not been explored to the nth degree that it should be. European Space Agency right now is discussing a moon village.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to try to consolidate all their countries that are involved with the European Space Agency, many countries, to build a lunar outpost. And the private sector is looking at, hey, if they're going, hey, we can get into the polar caps of Mars, of the moon that have ice in them and actually make fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we have depots that we commercial products of using fuel made on the moon to go to Mars.
Well, yeah, because I know that some people have suggested that we would perhaps even use the moon as the launching point, not launch directly from Earth.
Yeah. I think, look, here's my problem. I'm 70 next month. When I signed on to this space race checkpoint, here's where we're going, the moon. We're talking the late 50s. I'm signing up for the space program. We're going to the moon. We go to Mars, Alpha Centauri.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're so far behind my timeline that I signed up for. So we got work to do. And the moon, Mars, there was never a dividing aspect of these two great exploration points.
Mm-hmm.
And jumping off from there to beyond, to interstellar travel. So we're, in my mind, we're a little off track.
Yeah.
I don't want bifurcation. I want it all. I want to know that as a kid, I was right. We got to do everything, and not just the United States, but the entire global space program.
And how much of the motive for us to get a foothold in Mars is the long-term kind of insurance policy of what if a disaster happens and we had to relocate?
Okay. I think that's a really good point, and I'm glad you brought it up. There is a kind of the easy toss-out slogan is, we're going to be a multi-planet species. Let's be a multi-planet species. Okay. That sounds great. And I think you want to take ownership of the Earth and know how to operate Earth, and we don't do that very well right now.
Yeah.
I think we're learning lessons about operating planet Earth that will have some implications for Mars. So I guess the problem I have is that getting to Mars is a possible way to feel comfortable that our species is going to survive.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you the catch-22 in this one.
Well, it kind of leads us to treating this as a disposable planet, I guess.
Yes. I think, you know, we have the potential to be dinosaurs here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a cliche line, but if the dinosaurs had a space program, they'd still be around. Okay. Now, one of the big catch-22s in this, and I'm deferring to some other people that have sent me a lot of emails that I respect, this Planet Nine episode.
Oh, right.
My guess is that civilizations that are owners of their own solar system, like we're here on Earth, have a limited amount of time to get out of town.
Huh.
Because these kind of perturbations on the outside of our solar system, like the Oort cloud, you're going to have a cascading function of some other planet or other star mm-hmm. coming by to cascade in lots of material that sterilizes all the planets.
Wow.
And we're up for grabs.
Okay.
So I don't want to make it sound apocalypse now. This could happen way in the future. But I my guts tell me, and I've been reporting a lot of things over a lot of time, my guts tell me we got to watch this outer planet stuff that could actually perturb the eco-balance of our solar system.
Yeah. Well, you know, the miniseries and the book, Mars, envision how we would actually go about this potentially. How would we get there, first of all? What are we talking about?
Political will and leadership.
Well, I'm talking
about you want technology.
Before I even get there.
Yeah. No, I think the technologies are sitting there. We have launch vehicles.
Okay.
We've already gotten to Mars. It's not like a mystery thing.
Right.
We know how to land things on Mars. We know how to crash things on Mars.
Yeah.
We know how to be mobile on Mars with rovers. And so, you know, right now we have a one-ton rover mm-hmm. that landed in August of 2012, the Curiosity rover. Nuclear powered, it's doing its thing, and guess what? After landing on Mars in 2012, it has driven, stand by for the drum roll, 9 miles. And that's some mileage, but that's not enough mileage, because if you're going to explore a planet that exciting and that, there's mysteries to be had there. And we need to get people on there to really start using robots and their own foot power.
Some have said that maybe we would send robots that would build the Mars base or the colony there for us, and then we come over when we have a Hilton on Mars and it's all ready for us.
Well, that's a great question, because there is a bifurcation of interest mm-hmm. in using robotics and robotics and television to actually assemble the human outpost on Mars way before humans get there. And it's a good debate, because some people want to lob people to Mars directly. Other people say, let's go into Mars orbit, let the astronauts assemble the base on Mars mm-hmm. ahead of time. And we've had some experiments on the space station to actually use robots to assemble things down here on Earth as a test bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the great things about the space station. It is allowing astronauts on board to do test bedding mm-hmm. of technologies and capabilities that might be tapped for the Mars activities. But you're on a good roll there.
How long is the journey to Mars right now, or how long would it be at the point that we're talking about with this miniseries in this book, which is, I guess, in the 2030s?
Everybody kind of focuses on the 2030s, mid-2030s. Obama did in April of 2010. Mm-hmm. He kind of got a policy that said, hey, we're going to go and put people around Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama kind of, if I'm still alive, I think I will be, we'll get people down there.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an open-ended thing.
Yeah.
But I think people are focusing on that. Elon Musk, the entrepreneur, has much greater ambition in the sense of timeline.
Yeah. I'm beyond the timeline. I'm just talking about the distance, like from launch to landing. Yeah. How long would it actually take us to get there?
Well, we've done this over and over with robots. It's 6 to 9 months. You wait for the planets to realign. Yeah, it's one way. Now you got to wait for the planets to come back in the gear.
Yeah.
And so overall, we may be talking about a three-year kind of mission back and forth.
That's actually shorter than I thought.
Yeah. Well,
to get there.
Let's go.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, but you have to be careful about planetary alignments, and there's some years are better than others.
Yeah.
And they have all these people that do orbital mechanics, and they know exactly when to go. And Buzz Aldrin, my buddy that I wrote a book with, he has cycling spaceships that cruise between the Earth and Mars that you sort of like a taxi cab.
Yeah.
You hail one.
Okay.
You get on board. It takes you out to Mars. Then you go do your thing, and then you come back, and you get on the thing.
Okay.
So it's, the fun part of this is that people are thinking this. This is not like Foreverville.
Yeah.
It's going to be like this is potentially possible in our lifetime.
Now, is the greater risk in the getting there or the actual things that you're going to have to contend with on the planet?
All of the above.
Yeah.
And Mars is above us. It's going to be hard one way or the other to get there. The psychology of crews that have to go 6 or 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then the team building that has to happen. I don't want, Larry or –
Larry,
Jerry,
Curly,
or,
and Mo.
on the mission, this is going to be a pretty solid crowd that's going to be integrated, and they have to learn how to live with each other for a long period of time for that kind of mission to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And that brings up an interesting point that I was wondering. I'm assuming that your crew would have to be so much more than typical astronauts. I mean, I'm assuming that they would probably each have to have some sort of useful additional skill set, in terms of expertise and skills. What kind of people would comprise the mission to Mars aside from just being astronauts?
Well, typical astronaut is already out of the ballpark because these people go through, but I do look at the Mars mission as the most righteous of the right stuff. You're going to have to be pretty. Special to get on that mission. You're not going to hold your hand up in a crowd. I'd like to go. That's not going to happen.
I assume that you would probably want to have a doctor there, and what else?
Why not? It depends on the mission. Astrobiology, if you're searching for life on Mars, it's there, I can guarantee.
Right.
Microbes are there. We're going to find that. We're going to find some other clues that were going to be very surprising in the next few years.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking in terms of
things
not
going
horribly wrong and having everyone, it's not like the space station where you can just send them back down if someone has a heart attack or something.
That's exactly right. You're going to have to medical people. You're going to have
maybe even a shrink.
I don't know. Well, that's an extra module. You want to keep the shrinks.
Okay.
God help us if the lawyer comes on board.
And you do dedicate quite a bit of the book to the psychology and the aspect of how this would affect someone's mental stability.
Yeah.
Is it possible that the type of person that you would want for a mission to Mars might not be who you would typically consider to be an emotionally and psychologically healthy person under normal standards here on Earth? In other words, maybe you want someone who doesn't really care about people that much or doesn't really form attachments easily or someone who may not have that many people back home that they care about.
This is the kind of questionnaire I can see some of these people filling out. I don't care about anybody back on Earth. I don't have any dogs.
Exactly.
I don't have any pet food. I don't know. You know, we're going to find out.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I underline in the book, there are multiple parts on this Earth that have analog sites. They're actually shoving people into simulated Mars camps. And
in Antarctica, right?
Exactly. And Hawaii.
Right.
Numbers of other places. And we've highlighted some of those. We've had actual facilities on our planet that have contained people for numbers of months, up to a year.
Right.
To do simulated Mars missions. And what's it like sociologically to get around to understanding the crew dynamics?
Right.
And how clever are we going to have to be? What kind of people are going to be involved?
Right, but you never know till you're there because, I mean, these simulations are about one step above a reality show like, you know, Big Brother. You can someone can always call and say, okay, I quit.
Yeah.
And then they come and get you and you leave. Can't do that on Mars.
You can't do that
stuck.
On Mars. I think in there I used the term the loneliness of the long-distance runner. This is a kind of a time where we're going to have to pick and choose people, the best of our best, and not just the U.S., but internationals, culturally different kinds of attitudes, but integrating those people. And the space station has done that. We've had Russians. We've had all kinds of countries come on board the space station and work with people. I mean, I've heard astronauts tell me, I look at their expressions and I see that they're worried about something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you almost have to – how do you train people to look at eyes and the way they react to situations? And you feel either stress, they're worried, or they're delighted, or they hate you and they don't want to let you know. So all that's going to be a kind of a really interesting sociological experiment.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back to talk more with space journalist and Mars advocate Leonard David. When we come back in just a minute. If you're interested in my conversation today, you should check out Mars, Our Future on the Red Planet by my guest today, Leonard David, with a foreword by Ron Howard. And right now, you can download the audio version of his book for free with a special promotion just for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be Mars, Our Future on the Red Planet by Leonard David or any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And once again, before you start your Amazon shopping this Christmas, visit the sponsor page on our website at kickassnews.com and copy our Amazon link into your web browser first. Then Amazon will kick us a little coin for every order you make this season. Thanks for your continued encouragement and support. And now back to the show. I keep thinking about kind of the interpersonal dynamics and the I guess you could call it the office politics of a Mars colony.
Yeah.
I mean, would it be a tyranny of the majority where everyone gets a vote, or does the captain make the tough decisions? Yeah. Or, you know, when there's a dispute, do they call mission control and the internal politics of a Mars base would be like?
I just thought of this. I think you've decided that one of the modules will have a water cooler in it, and we'll all sit around and debate this stuff.
Yeah.
Harry, the commander, I think he's lost it. I think we got to turn back now. This is not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's like if you have a dispute, would mission control be the tiebreaker?
Or to be serious about this, I mean, a mission to Mars is fraught with peril.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first crew could have a death on watch.
Right.
And demoralizing the crew is like, this is too hard. We've lost one of our crew members.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sounds like sci-fi and we're going to get that. But I think everybody worries about those kind of situations.
Oh, yeah.
So
I do.
you go first and I'll come after you.
Yeah.
But there's issues there.
I think that nihilism would be very dangerous on a, on a Mars base where, you know, after a while, if people are so far removed from society and rules and, you know, maybe they don't really care. Maybe they decide, well, I don't really want to work. I don't want to do any research today. I'm just going to sit and take a nap or they turn on each other. It's like,
well, this sounds like we're going to a shopping mall or Walmart. I don't know. You know, we deal with human interactions so many ways down here. But again, I think that's the test of this. It's the best of the best and the best of humanity.
Yeah.
And how do we pick the cream of the crop early on? Because later on, I think, you know, once we've proven the technology, when you were asking about the, how to get there, and we have habitats on Mars, and we start using the local resources on Mars to build ever grand, you know, more elaborate habitats, you start seeing the potential for settlement. You start seeing and getting around this idea of one way to Mars, and I'm going to die on Mars.
Yeah.
But that infrastructure, if it allows it to grow, you will have more people making that trek that won't feel so threatened by the mission.
Right. Well,
but we got to get there. It's
got to get
easy.
There first. Yeah. But you have water there. What other resources do you have that could be used so that you're not just constantly shipping in supplies? You know.
Exactly.
All the
That's
time.
A really important point. And we've got to cut the at some point the umbilical line between the Earth and Mars. You have to live off the land. And in the book, I really stress this whole attitude of, we're not talking survival on Mars. We're talking thriving on Mars. And to do that, you have to use the local resources.
Yeah.
And it's plentiful. There's water ice. There's iron oxides in the soil. Also a dangerous thing, perchlorate, is a carpet on Mars that's pretty much pervasive. Dangerous stuff. People
poisonous
are working on how to use perchlorates.
Okay.
You know, we use perchlorate for fireworks on the 4th of July.
Okay.
So some people are going, perchlorates, that's great. We can make fuel. We can go. We can.
Well, I guess luckily there's not a lot of oxygen then.
Well, there's
on Mars.
The oxygen, you know, we have domes on Mars. We create oxygen. We'll bring plants. You know, I just see it as some. The thing that's probably the oddest thing when I got done writing the book. It's a planet that has potential. And the thing that makes us feel strange about it is because it's 160 million miles. You know, it's pretty far away. but when you look at the pictures that Curiosity, the rover on Mars right now, is sending back, you get a sense, you know, I think I've been there. I feel like it's Utah. I feel like it's the Southwest.
Yeah.
I feel like I see buttes. I see canyons. I see water that's no longer there that carved immense features on the planet. I see subsurface ice. And I think the future is that Mars is going to have a lot of aha moments for us. I think it's going to be a planet that's going to give up its mysteries little by little. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But I think we got some real surprises coming in the next few years.
Is it a pretty hostile environment, at least for the first people who go there?
Mars is out to kill you at all times. it's tough. The atmosphere is rough and it's thin. Ultraviolet coming in.
Yeah.
Chlorides on the soil.
Radiation, it sounds like, is one of the biggest concerns, right?
Yeah, but, you know, what I always, when I got done with that book, I always compared it to ocean exploration.
Okay.
Ooh, the Earth is flat, the ships fall off, the sea serpents are out there, the whirlpools, scurvy comes in. These are all the early makings of exploration.
Right.
And what do? We beat those odds.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen to Mars. To me, the microgravity today is almost the scurvy of space travel. It is the thing that we have to get around of bone loss, of the way
muscle
the human
loss.
Body reacts to space travel.
Yeah.
You create artificial gravity. Okay.
Is that something that we could possibly really do?
Yes, we do, and we
that's
don't spend
just
enough
sci-fi?
Time and money. We don't spend enough time and money on it, and it's going to be one of the solutions to the issue.
I would think that's key.
And it's key. And the other thing that's going to happen, Mars is not going to be that far away in time travel distance and time because, well, the distance will be there, but the time to get there will change.
Yeah.
New propulsion systems are coming. We're talking 6 to 9 months to get there. What if it's 2 weeks?
Okay.
I just flew out to talk.
I'd take that trip.
I just flew out to here to talk to you on a plane.
Yeah.
I got from New York to here pretty fast. And if I was on a Conestoga wagon right now trying to get here and be on time, I'd be late. And so transportation has told us that things change.
Yeah.
And I'm going to watch it. You see new propulsion systems coming in the physics papers. We've got some work to do. We're not – Mars is not going to be that far away.
I guess the long-term goal is to, like you said, have thriving colonies, not just little outposts. Elon Musk has been saying he wants a city on Mars. One of the things that you show in the book is terraforming Mars and actually growing vegetables and whatever we need there. Can you do that with the soil on Mars in that kind of environment? How would you get around that?
Well, we don't get around it very well on Earth. We have a thing called global climate change.
Right.
And it's terraforming the planet.
Yeah.
And this is terraforming. We're actually doing it to the negative right now. There are people are suggesting a 100-year plan from Mars that we could actually transform the planet into a Earth 2.
Mm-hmm.
Make it more livable. And can you do that?
Yeah.
And how do you do that? Where are the switches on Mars that you can fool with? Because some of the switches we've haphazardly shut off and on our Earth by human impact on our planet.
Yeah.
So there is an argument that says maybe Mars can be Earth 2.0 or something.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, here's another catch-22 that I really try to underscore. There's ethics involved here. If there's a life force on Mars that is a second genesis of life, or even any kind of life that's like Earth-like, what right do we have to go and transform their planet on their behalf?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good debate. It's a good dialogue. And planetary protection people are there. And I love the lawyers that are there already. They have some laws that are international laws about transforming a planet. So,
yeah, I mean, if we land there first, is it ours or does it belong to the world, to the universe? Has anyone figured out some of the rules as to who has a right to Mars?
I'm going to back up to the moon because that issue is right now really rife.
Yeah.
Property rights on the moon. There are certain parts of the moon that seem to be really interesting for polar ice buried in the craters. And who has the right is first come, first serve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the entrepreneurs going, if I go and spend all that money on my own dime, I need the right to mine.
Well, that's
the
moon. How it's always been pretty much. I mean, other than I guess Antarctica is kind of the lone exception here on Earth.
Okay, we've got some examples.
Rules. Yeah.
But even the Antarctica, if you really watch what's going on with national security and climate change, people are getting worried about the Arctic resources, North and South Pole.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this plays out in the future. But that's,
you
know, for a writer, that's all good stuff.
Oh, yeah. 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 A lot of questions, which is fun for a writer, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, you say that it may end up being a collaboration between countries like Europe, Russia, China, India, and, of course, us, because it would make it technologically more feasible and also be nice to have someone sharing the costs of that mission. Is that what we're looking at, that it probably won't be the U.S. going it alone on the first mission to Mars?
It's hard to say. It's a one avenue of doing a mission to Mars where it's U.S.-led. We're going to put our people down there, run around, set up modules. We're the leader, you know. But I don't see that happening right now. India has an orbiter around Mars. Japan's doing some great space exploration activities. Russia's coming back into the vogue and doing their thing. China wants to put a rover on Mars in 2020. There's multiple nations. The European Space Agency, as we talked about before, they want to put a village on the moon as a stepping stone to get to Mars.
Yeah.
And so you have all those puzzle pieces flying. Yeah. And it's pretty – and then you add Elon Musk, the entrepreneurs.
Right.
And for me, again, these are great stories. I mean, this is an evolving portfolio of possibilities that is coming. And I don't know how they're going to play out. People will lose vehicles. Things will blow up. People lose progress. We've landed – Europeans the other day crash-landed into Mars with their Schiaparelli lander. They actually – cratered literally on Mars by trying to get a little robot lander on there. And it's hard. Mars is hard. And it's really hard when you crash into it 200 miles an hour. It's very hard. Mars is unforgiving.
But most likely the first missions will not be private sector enterprises, would you say?
I'm not saying that.
Really?
No.
You think Elon Musk might get there before NASA?
I have no idea. I love Elon, and I think he's a great guy, and I think he's a visionary, and, you know, on one side of the picture, he's a visionary. On the other side, I have a vision of his last rocket exploding
on the launch pad. That's what I was thinking.
So he's a visionary, and he's got some issues. But NASA has problems. Europe has just crash-landed this vehicle. So, again, the Mars is hard is the kind of going-in philosophy, but we know how to land on Mars. Lots of landers. A lot of people are trying to get to Mars. And I think collectively, to get to your question about the global outlook, is pretty positive.
Okay.
The United Arab Emirates is trying to build their own Mars orbiter.
Right.
There is something going on about Mars. I think it, in some ways, it used to be the cachet, ooh, I launched an Earth satellite. Well, everybody's launching Earth satellites, but now to get to that big jump to Mars, hey, I'm a cool player.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, it's funny because I keep going back to the psychology of all this. That's what fascinates me. And I have to think that we're kind of pushing our luck a little bit more if we throw a bunch of people in together from different cultures and you throw in geopolitics into the mix with a bunch of people cooped up together. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Well, that's called the International Space Station. I mean, it's not something we're not familiar with.
Right.
So we've kind of gone – there's a window that gives us a perspective on how we might do the Mars exploration add-on.
One of the things that was interesting to me in here is in talking about long-term colonization, because you do have the radiation issue, and apparently there are some pretty gusty winds on Mars. You have a mock-up of an underground colony, an underground city where people would be protected from the elements on Mars. That's straight out of science fiction.
That is, you know, to me, it's an irony that, you know, we came out of the caves and we're going to go in the 21st century and go back into the caves on Mars. But there are caves that are out of the UV that's coming down because Mars is a thin atmosphere. There's a lot of radiation. Yeah. And are the caves the place where we're going to start understanding how to live? I don't know. I think that's for a writer, that's a great circular logic thing. but you're right. I think Mars... I really, you know, we have just, you know, it's corny, but we've scratched the surface on Mars. Mars has got a lot of surprises ahead, and you can see some things bubbling in the scientific literature that are coming.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty fascinating place, and let's get on with it.
You know, along those lines, we've established that there is water on Mars, and everyone was saying where there's water, there's life.
Yeah.
Is that really the case?
That's the axiom that people like to sign up for. I don't know, but I mean,
a big assumption to make, perhaps?
It's a big assumption, but I think it's pretty clear that when I talk to astrobiologists that know the field of Mars, it's underground. Whatever is migrated,
really?
You know, from the surface with the harsh radiation is probably underground. And those water features you're talking about, are they being fed by huge aquifers underneath the surface on Mars? And there are some of the scientists I talked to that are in the book talk about that. And I'm kind of in that thing. It would be odd not to find life on Mars.
Really?
I think.
How odd would it be to find life above, say, the microbial level on Mars?
Again, I think Mars has got some surprises. I'm not going to go off there, but I think—
Hopefully all good ones.
There could be all kinds of fossil evidence. And, you know, you just don't know where we're mm-hmm. going.
Yeah.
Some of the literature that I'm aware of right now. And those shoes are yet to drop. But it just here on Earth, the extremophiles that we have found on our own planet suggest that life is tenacious. It tries to find the damnedest places to live. And some of those places that we have found life on Earth are very creative ways to survive, much like on Mars.
Yeah.
And that's why I say it would, to me, be very odd that life on Mars does not exist. And I'll do something else. I don't think I'm not even sure we haven't seen it already. We haven't recognized it yet.
I'm assuming we can't just land anywhere. Do we have an idea where we would want to land there?
On a safe place.
Right. Yeah. First and foremost.
Yeah, you want to be safe. You want to have one of the things that happened to me in writing this book is that I was asked to write this book at a time the very day I was at a meeting at the Lunar Planetary Institute in Houston, Texas, where they brought 200 or so scientists and asked them, hey, we're going to put a crew on Mars. Where should they go? there was 50 sites that were kind of picked.
Oh, okay. So we have options.
There are a lot of options. But when you hone those down, and we do this with the robotic landers. Mm-hmm. I've gone to a lot of robotic lander mission meetings where they actually ask people to present, why should that rover go there? Why should it land over there?
Yeah.
And they start getting into really nitty-gritty detail. And with the human missions on Mars, what you have is a exploration zone of about 100 kilometers or so, some circular thing.
Okay.
You want to land the people safely,
but
you also want to get to a place that's scientifically interesting. Again, it's safe to land there, and then how do you rove to those edges of the exploration mm-hmm. zone? And more importantly, and this is really underscored in the book, you have to have access to resources on Mars, underground pockets of ice, material that is embedded in the upper crust of Mars that you may be able to abstract and make oxygen, make fuel, make something.
Yeah,
and because if we're just going to Mars to plant a flag, salute the flag, pick up the rocks.
A lot of hassle for that.
It's a lot of hassle and a lot of money.
Yeah.
So the point is, you know, in the book, it really is important to realize we're in some kind of new exploration potential.
Yeah.
Not Apollo that you plant the flag.
Right.
And also not Apollo where in 1972, society, forget the space program. Mm-hmm. We got too many problems. We're cutting us off.
Yeah.
And the last people to walk on the moon were Apollo 17 in December of 72.
Well, this is perhaps a very basic level question, but I'm just personally curious. When looking up at the heavens from the vantage point of being on Mars, would it look different than the night sky here on Earth?
Looks different to me from some of the robot pictures looking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks definitely.
What's different?
Well.
You can see the stars.
Yeah, you can see stars and you can see. But the Earth, this is one of the psychological aspects of being on Mars versus being on the moon.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Buzz Aldrin, when I wrote the book, I mean, the moon is right there.
Right.
It's like you're looking at it. And everybody he ever knew is on that Earth.
Yeah.
Now, think of people on Mars where Mars is one here. Then you have the sun in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the Earth on the other side of the sun. You're totally out of view.
Yeah.
And some of the psychologists I talked to, one is that exact term, Earth out of view. We don't know what that does to people. The other thing is the overview effect. It happens on Earth where astronauts look down on the Earth and they know everybody.
Right.
There's no borders and they get euphoric and they're hugging the planet and there's environmentalism going on.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But you're so far away where the Earth is a dot.
Yeah. I mean, I'm friends with Buzz too, although he's in Florida now, so I haven't seen him lately. But I once asked him, I said, when you got to the moon, I think the distance is something like, what, 9 times the circumference of the Earth? You know, in the middle of the euphoria and the excitement of it, there must have been some part of him that was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
I'm really far from home.
Yeah.
How the hell am I going to get back?
Yeah.
You know? Before we wrap up, I just have to ask you, okay, and I know I can't really ask this with your wife in the room. Your lovely wife is here. So I don't know if I can get an honest answer, but I'll rephrase it. I was going to say, do you want to go? But okay, let's say you were 29 and single. Would you want to go to Mars?
Only if you go and tell me, send me some postcards and say, hey, the
traveling's
fine.
Okay, you want me to be the guinea pig, huh?
I'm not.
That ain't happening.
My wife does want to go,
yeah,
which I don't know what that means, but he's ready to go. But I
Your wife does want to go, or she wants you to go?
No.
That may be a whole other situation.
Yeah, I know. There may be something there. I didn't hear the answer very correctly, maybe. I don't know.
Well, we should ask her. I see her. She's putting her finger up here. I think she has some input on this.
I'd go one way.
You would personally go one way.
But we're late 60s. Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I can say that because nobody.
Okay. Well, would you two go one way together? Or is that putting a lot on a marriage?
That's putting a lot of pressure on me. I got bills to pay.
I hear you.
And also, I remember my mom a long time ago in the Apollo program. She's gone now, but she used to say, the meek shall inherit the earth. The brave ones are going to the moon.
Isn't that what Ralph Cramden used to say to his wife, too?
Is that where she picked
I'm
up?
I'm going to send you to the moon now.
Yeah, really. Well, maybe she wants to send me to Mars. But no, the opportunity is there, and the curiosity is there. Mars is a metaphor for exploration, for scientific discovery, and for danger.
Yeah.
And this is not for the weak of mind, weak of heart, but that's what we do as a species, and this can happen.
It's exciting stuff, and this was so much fun talking to you about this. The National Geographic Channel's Mars miniseries premieres on Nat Geo on November 14th, and your book is available now on Amazon and in bookstores. It's called Mars, Our Future on the Red Planet. Leonard David, thanks for joining me.
Great to be with you.
Thanks again to Leonard David for joining me. If you enjoyed today's podcast, then you can order his book, Mars, Our Future on the Red Planet, on Amazon. Or you can also download the audio version for free through a special trial offer just for our listeners at audibletrial.com/kickassnews. For information and listings on Nat Geo's new miniseries, Mars, visit channel.nationalgeographic.com. And check out Leonard David's website at leonarddavid.com. And once again, before you start your Amazon shopping this Christmas, visit the sponsor page on our website at kickassnews.com and copy our Amazon link into your web browser first. Then Amazon will kick us a little coin for every order you make this season. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kickass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/KickassNews. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@KickassNews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.
Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.